I was part of one of the students that transferred from Harding to New Haven, and so that was adjustment, you know. Harding was majority African American, then, you know, New Haven was majority Caucasian. And I even had people who I built those relationships with that said to me, well, I like you. You're different from the other black people. And they're like, you know, there's these black people and then there's the, you know, the word that we don't like to use. And I just use those opportunities to get personal with people and learn them as individuals so then I can teach you. Because I think it's easier once you build that relationship to say something, because I would take something from a friend more than I would take from a stranger, right, especially someone that I'm already, you know, against.
Right, right.
You know, when you asked the question, I immediately reflected back to the workforce for me. And, you know, in all of the years that I've been in the workforce, I've dealt with a lot. I've gotten to the place in my life, however, where I believe in allowing folks to have their opinion. You can have your opinion just like I have my opinion. It's only when you voice that opinion to me that I feel like now we definitely need to have a conversation, right? Because I'm, you know, if a person is set in their ways, they're not going to change how they feel. But if you're comfortable enough to say to me how you feel about me, whether it's because I'm an African-American woman, because I'm in an administrative position, or whatever the case may be, if you get to the place where you're comfortable enough to say that to me, then now we're in a place now where we need to have a conversation. But I try not to run behind and fight a whole lot of unnecessary battles, because many folks are stuck in their ways, and there's not a whole lot that you can do about it. And when we allow them to take us there, it only stresses us out. It doesn't change them at all. It only adds stress to my life. And so I pick and choose my battles, but I feel like if a person brings something to me and they're comfortable enough to bring it to me, then, yeah, let's have a conversation.
To say that when they feel comfortable enough to bring it to you, then they better be ready for what they're going to get, because they're going to get it for real. So, you know, the thing is that what is back to putting the question back on them.
You know, it's interesting because, like, you don't even know that you have to, that you're dealing with it when you're dealing with it for black folks, right? Because we're so used to dealing with it. The thing that's funny to me is when one of my white friends encounter the same thing and then come, do you know what they just said to me? And I'm like, it's every day. It's every, in one way or another, you just become used to it, which is really sad. Like, you shouldn't get used to it, but it's every day for many, especially for black women, right? Especially for black women. Black men catching the heat on the street. Black women catching the heat in the boardroom. They absolutely don't want black women in the boardroom. And we really catch the heat because if our hair don't look like you feel like our hair should look like, we catching the heat. If our clothes not the way you feel like our clothes should be like, we catching the heat. So I remember one time we were in a heated meeting, my immediate supervisor, this young man's immediate supervisor, and he was complaining about me because I refused to do his work. And I let him know, I'm not doing it. That's your job. I'm not going to do it. So he called to have a formal meeting to complain about me not doing his work. And he was really intent and really angry. And I try really hard not to be her, the angry black woman in the room. And so he sits right next to me, pulls his chair up after yelling, and he says, come on, soul sister. That was my opportunity to tell him, my name is Sharon. I'd appreciate it if you use Sharon. And I kept on working. We encounter those type of things on a regular basis. Maybe not to that degree, but absolutely on a regular basis. What's the next question?
Some white people really want to know how they can help change our racist society. What specific suggestions can you give them besides simply saying, educate yourself?
Have a conversation at the dinner table with your uncle who you know does not care about black lives. That auntie Who you, I mean, literally, like, right, when we've talked earlier, and I'm going to let the panel say because I wanted them to talk and not me, but literally earlier when we talked about don't look for me for the answer lies within you, and it lies within being bold enough, courageous enough, and outlandish enough to be able to speak bold at the dinner table on Thanksgiving when you hear your uncle say, those blacks. It's the S that makes it bad. Not the black, it's the S. Because that's when you know that it's being said in a negative tone, those blacks, the blacks. That's when you know you need to have that conversation. Anybody else?
I would say, you know, when you are at the table and you hear people say things and you want to be one to effectuate change, you got to be first willing to give them up because they probably will no longer be your friend. So you got to be willing to know, you know, what am I going to lose if I tell them what they really need to know and not what they want you to tell them. You know, they want you to say, oh, you know, don't worry about it, but tell them and mean what you say, that these are some things that you can do to help make it better. And you just start listing some things. But, you know, things has to change. They can't be the same. But people won't like you when you tell them the truth and tell them about themselves. And sometimes those are your relatives. Most of the time it is your relatives.
You know, the most segregated place is Sunday morning at church. And the church that I'm connected to, I did not connect to the church because it was a white church. I connected to the church. First of all, I felt like the Spirit led me there. And secondly, because of the mission. And what we're trying to do is, right what we're doing today, we're trying to bridge these gaps. We're trying to make sure that the Word of God is going forth. Because at the end of the day, I just happen to be a believer. At the end of the day, it's going to take the love of Christ to change the heart of man. And so that's where I found some healing. I serve in our youth department, and although our church is growing and it is diverse, right now there it's mostly white. And so I get to serve with little bitty kids that don't look like me, but don't care that they don't look like me. They just want someone to hug them and rub them when they're hurting, or they miss mom and miss dad. And so that's where it's going to start at, is when we get our little babies, because sometimes you can get so set in your ways, and I think that's what's happening. But when we can get our little babies and begin to change the mindset of those children, that's where we can start. And I know for me, City Church has been that conduit that is changing how we view each other.
Next question.
When someone looks at you and seriously says, I don't want my white sons to miss out on an opportunity to serve on a board because the company needs to have so many black people, it is crazy, but I didn't know the best way to respond. I was shocked.
Equality is not pie. There is enough space for everyone. If there's 10 spots, our point is not to say, oh, well, five of them has to be African American. The point is people who are qualified need to, for the positions need to have the positions. It's not about your race.
Well, it sounds like affirmative action all over again. The thing is that if you treat everybody the same, then somebody's going to miss out anyway. So what makes you think that your son is any better than the black person who is applying for that same position or is sitting on that same board or whatever? It doesn't make any difference if they're, as Chanel has said, choose them according to their qualifications. But that's where we always get left out, because the qualifications always change when it comes to us.
You know, I at the press conference, I was really shocked because Tim Pate was very, very transparent. And we have compiled a list of potential candidates that are well qualified to serve on some of the mayor's boards that for whatever reason he hasn't been able to find. But Tim Pate said this, and I want to answer that question that you asked. Tim Pate said he didn't even know about this website that we have been told to go to fill out the form to become a potential candidate for one of these boards. He didn't even know about it. And he said, I've served on multiple boards. I've never filled out an application. He said, so I am just dumb to what you guys are talking about. He said, every time that I've served on a board, I've been pursued. So once the playing field is right, you got to have the same rules. And that's the problem. That was really an eye-opener for me when Tim Pate made that statement that I've never filled out a, what application are you talking about? So I think that's one of the things that we need to address with the mayor, saying, what is this application process?
All right, for those of you who aren't aware, the elected African-American officials all came together and combined a beginning list of a number of names of people who we know are have a desire to be on boards, and we presented that just in case you weren't aware of what she was referencing to. What's our next question?
Fort Wayne Community Schools recently hired a new superintendent, a white man. Do you believe a large and diverse school district can be led effectively by a white man during this time of racial crisis? What can he do to put black and brown students and families first?
So, yes, I do believe that a white man can lead during this time, because the misnomer would be, or the mistake for us as people in this city would be, to think that just because the times are bad right now, that he does not have the qualifications to lead, right? The other mistake would be is to think that he's not an advocate for African Americans, because he hasn't had a chance to show us who he is. Once he shows us who he is, like Maya Angelou said, we will then believe him. But right now, I believe that we should give him the benefit of the doubt. And we can also help him out by applying a little bit of pressure to him so that he knows we want and expect equality.
And not only Fort Wayne Community Schools, but University of St. Francis and all of those positions where women have left those positions and they are now all filled by white males. I think we should give all of them a chance. But the new superintendent for Fort Wayne Community Schools has to walk in the same shoes, in a sense, Wendy had to walk in when she first became the superintendent of schools. And she was there for 17 years, and there are still people who don't believe she did a great job, and I disagree with them.
Okay.
You know, I've had the opportunity to be a part of the school board when we, East Allen, had to choose a new superintendent. We really put a lot of work into making sure that we elect or choose the best candidate. So I would just say that those board members really stayed up plenty of nights making sure that the best candidate was chosen for that position. And so I believe, based on my experience, that they elected the best candidate at this particular time. But in the words like you said, when he show you something different, believe it.
All right, next question.
How do you deal with those who view the police who kill hundreds of black men and women as just a few bad apples? The saying is, a few bad apples spoil the whole barrel.
I agree with that. I think that for an issue to be going on like police brutality, and for others to say, oh, well, it's not really happening in Fort Wayne, or it's not really that bad, you're not aware. because even what occurred here downtown, we've seen it before. It wasn't just a protest. Every Three Rivers Festival that I have went to, if stuff is not going perfect, there's a problem. People are being maced, people are being arrested, and all of these things, and it's just unfortunate that people are peacefully protesting for others in different parts of the United States, and it's still an issue, and it has escalated. And like, one of the things I enjoy about social media is you can see it. And, you know, people say, well, we need more cameras on these officers. We don't need more videos. We already see it. We need the change in the officers. Because if you're racist, that's your personal choice. But like I said, it's personal. Your job and your position, you have a duty to our community and to your officers to do your job. You got to keep personal at home.
I think that the issue is bigger than a few bad apples. The issue, in my mind, is that we have a large number of black folks that are dying in the hands of police officers, other individuals in the community who decide they just want to be a police officer, or whomever the case may be. The issue is bigger than that, right? And so I don't want to lose focus. Yes, the police are, you know, in certain areas, the police, it's an issue, right? But let's not lose focus of the bigger picture is, you know, African Americans are dying, and they shouldn't be, right? If it's just a routine traffic stop or whatever the case may be, folks are dying. And so that's where the fear comes in. You know, I'm looking behind me, trying to see who behind me so that I don't get pulled over, because I just don't know how that's going to turn out. I might get ugly, like Ms. Delores said here, you know, and say the wrong thing, and then next thing you know, y'all reading about me on the news. So, you know, the issue is bigger than that, and we need to make sure that we don't lose sight of the overarching problem.
So I worry when we ask that question, right? Because I do believe, and everybody who's had a bag of apples knows that it could lead to the other one rottening out. But one of the things, the thing that makes me weary about it is because I see that people do that to black folk, right? One black person creates a crime and they say, all y'all created the crime, right? They paint the whole brush with all of us. I've only known of one race, white race, really, that if a white person creates a crime, it's just that person. And in many of the other races, it's reflective on all of our community. So I don't want to say that all cops are bad. I won't say that, because I'll be talking about my cousin or I'll be talking about my auntie, right? But I can say that, just like we tell our kids, be careful who you run around with, because if you're not a strong enough battery to charge them up, they will run you down. And so the same thing happens with police officers. They have to be careful, because if they're not a strong enough good cop, then the bad cop can run them down. But I don't want to paint all cops with the same paintbrush.
How do you reimagine police departments?
Well, in my perfect world, they'd have Burmese, they'd have Hispanics, they'd have Mexican, they'd have every nationality on it. They would be street cops walking around being friendly with neighbors and friends, and they would arrest bad people and put bad people away. That would be my perfect world, but I live in the world, and so we won't be able to see that. So all we can do is continue to encourage good behavior and call out that that's bad.
I also would like to see police again in the community, on their bikes, talking with the kids in the community, instead of kids, when they see the police, they're running the other way. There was a time under another administration some years ago when there were many cops on bikes riding through the neighborhood. It was a Democrat, riding through the neighborhood. So I'd love to see that again. So therefore, our black boys, when they see cops, they don't think that it's a bad thing.
Right.
You know, they won't run away from it. So that's how I would imagine putting them, not only those who look like them, but those from other races, other nationalities, and all of that, so we can get to know that this is a world that we live in, so we want everybody, but we would like to see more of those who look like us in those communities.
And we need it because we need more police officers, and we won't get them if they're scared to run because they think it's bad Absolutely. For them.
So then what do you say to young people who fear the police?
It's not only young people who fear the police. Some of us sitting out here fear the police. So
sitting up here.
Yeah. So one of the things that I would say is that get to be one, maybe. It is very hard to get, especially black young men, to even apply to be a police officer, because some kind of way, when we had about 12 to apply before the last class, and none of them made it because of the psychological test that was done by some company somewhere. And ironically, how is it that none of those 12, was it 12, Irma? None of those 12 made the list. So you got to think about, you know, am I going to get a fair shot if I want to be a police officer? Am I going to get a fair shot? And then if I make it to be a police officer, am I going to be targeted for whatever goes wrong in a different community?
I want to hear Chanel speak. And then we have a stack of questions, so I'm going to ask, because black women, we coming up, yeah, y'all know how to talk. And we coming up on a short time, so I'm going to ask us to reduce the length of our time so we can get as many questions in as we can, because we have about 30 minutes left, and I definitely want to hear Chanel answer that question.
My recommendation that I would give to people is treat everyone with the experience that you get from them. When I get pulled over, I don't instantly get hostile with the police or feel like, well, why are you pulling me over? And what did I do? And you know, like, you see people who won't roll down the window. I mean, that's a human being too. I want him to treat me like a human, and so I'm gonna do the same. And like with me, I have a 5-year-old godson who wants to be a police officer. I cannot teach him that police officers are bad, but what I will teach him and instill in him that you treat people how you want to be treated, and you lead by example.
There we go. All right.
If we're talking about equality and the need for people of color in positions of power, what has or is our city council doing to address this?
The other day, I got to watch the council meeting, and it was really nice to see people interacting. And one of the African-American attorneys in Fort Wayne was being talked about. And the one thing that I loved is people stood up for him. And they said, you, and it was you personally. I commented, I said, yes, Ms. Tucker. Because it's like, you will not tarnish someone else. And it's like, when you stand on these boards, you got to use your voice. You've been elected to do exactly that. And so that would be my point. And thank you for that. I appreciated that. I said, yes.
As a mixed young woman, both black and Puerto Rican, who grew up in a white community, how do I deal with the criticism from the black community, such as you're just a white girl who has never struggled?
Ooh, that's a good question. I love it, to whoever wrote it. We kind of hit on that earlier. Let's talk about that one again. She's mixed, two races, and she feels like she's being discriminated against another. How do we help encourage that from happening?
So to me, this is another one of those situations where you have to learn how to, or you just choose your battles, right? Because you're going to interact with those individuals throughout your life. You know, the only encouragement I would have is just to be proud of who you are. Be proud of both sides of who you are. And if a person is open to hearing from you and hearing about your experiences, then by all means, educate them. But if they're not, if it's just, you know, individuals being ignorant, then that, those are the situations that you have to learn how to just walk away from.
Some of the hostility you're going to run into, because people will tend to say that, well, you got it good on both sides, so, you know, and they try to play down who you are, but you need to stand up for who you are.
I'm a white chick. I've been saying people of color. Is that acceptable?
No. She says she a white chick. She's been saying people of color. So that's not acceptable? No. What's acceptable?
You can say their race. I feel like colored is such a negative term.
Ooh, girl, you better come
because
on.
Because you're colored. White people are not white. I'm Y'all colored. Have color as well. Like colored people. No, no, no.
Not colored people?
No.
But people of color and colored people, to me, are two different things.
Let's talk about it. Let's help the world out. What's the difference?
I understand. And see, that's why it's important to get to know the individual, because it really depends on who you're talking to and what their preferences are.
Okay.
You know, if I hear someone, I was in a meeting once before, and I don't think the individual really realized what she was saying, but she said, you know, the colored students, and I about had a fit. I did. You know, I had to get up and walk out the room, and, you know, and everybody at the table was uncomfortable because I kept saying, she said colored people. Did you hear what she said? She said, and it was all white people at the table. You know, but nobody took it the way I took it, but that's the way I took it. But it really truly depends on who it is you're talking to. If she were to say our students of color, that wouldn't have bothered me at all. But she said the colored students, and that was different to me.
Does it take you back to history?
It absolutely does.
Does it take you back to the whites only faucet, the colored faucet? Absolutely. That's the difference.
Yes.
Does that help? Whoever asked that question? All right.
That's like saying you people.
Right.
Yeah. I'm trying to be, no. Okay.
All right, next question. We're about to get in trouble up here. Next question.
Do you think racism is a problem of the human heart?
It is definitely a problem of the human heart, but it's definitely, I don't get mad at racist people. And I'm gonna tell you why, because when you, especially when you're dealing with someone that is upper in age, who were taught by racist parents, this is a thing my mom reminded me the other day. She's like, Sharon, when you look at these pictures, and you see these folks standing looking at their prize because they're hanging a young man from a tree. And those little kids that were there standing around, they're just adults now. It didn't go away. So you have to remember they're then raising other little kids who are smiling while it's standing around. So I don't get mad at them because that's all they've ever known. What I get frustrated with is how do we change that so it doesn't become the only thing that they know and we don't perpetuate it to the next generation.
And I'd rather deal with a racist person that I know is a racist than somebody who perpetuate they are something else, but they got all these racist ways. Let me know you're a racist. I'll know who you are, and I'll know how to deal with you. But the other ones, you got to tiptoe around. See, I'll be going to jail.
It's interesting
y'all
that you say
take
that.
Take up money for Elder so she don't go to jail.
It's interesting that you say that because in my higher education experience, I had an opportunity to work at a Christian college. And I often say, you know, if I had to work a place where it's predominantly white, I prefer to work in a secular predominantly white place because I feel like Christians sometimes hide behind the cross and they say, oh, well, I can't be racist because I'm a Christian, you know, and they hide behind the cross. And at least with the folks out in the secular world, you know what you're dealing with, and they'll make it clear to you what you're dealing with. But when you're trying to deal with folks that you think would be easy to connect with, because if I'm a child of God and you're supposedly a child of God, we should have that connection. But if we can't make that connection because you're hiding behind the cross, then we can't get anywhere.
We were campaigning one time on Tillman Street. And one of my campaign people walked up to Adora, and she wasn't even there very long. And she came back very shooken, right? And I said, what's wrong? She's like, he said to me, get off my porch, N-word. And I said, oh, good. At least we know not to come back to this house. Next question.
What is your why?
Well, like I've said, I have 4 nephews that are going to grow up in this world. I don't want them to have to be in fear. Like, even with me having a godson who wants to be a police officer, I don't want him to grow up thinking police officers are bad, because just like you said, these kids are being exposed to it and they're being taught that. And with us, like, yes, he's not understanding of what's going on in the news, but there will be a time he will be my age and he will get it. And I don't want this to be what he sees and for him to say, you know, bad things about the police and put them all in a category, because I agree, not all police officers are bad. So that's my why.
I don't believe that God has placed me where he's placed me to be quiet. You know, I'm typically a very reserved person, and I don't really
get too riled up about a whole lot, except when it comes to my kids. Other than that, I don't get real riled up about a whole lot. But I had the opportunity last weekend to watch Just Mercy on Netflix. And honestly, my husband and I were just looking for something to watch, so I didn't know what I was getting ready to watch. But by the time I got to the end of that video, I said, enough is enough. And so I had to pray, because I don't ever want to move without the Lord saying, this is where I want you to go. And I honestly, to bring it all back, I don't believe that the Lord has put me where he's put me in my profession and in my life for me to sit still anymore. I believe that it's time for me to take a greater stand to speak up for my people.
My why. I can, Kim, I watched Mercy just Sunday night. I mean, what's today is Monday. I think we watched it on Saturday night as a family. And I in the words of Fannie Lou Hamer, you know, you're just sick and tired of being sick and tired. And so why do I do what I do? I do it because I honestly believe in the good of people, and I want to see a better world for my grandchildren and my children and their children. And I believe we can achieve that.
Why? Why does it have to be a why? Why can't we? Well, I guess that's a why. Why can't we just all get along? But we don't live in a world where we all can get along, because people who look like me, sometimes I don't like them because of the things that they do. And I ask the question, why? So, you know, my why is whatever I can do to make this world a better place for those who look like me, for those who don't look like me, for God's people, my why is, why can't I do something more to make it better?
I don't know why. I ain't figured it out yet. But I can tell you this. My mama said, mama, right? She said that I've always fought for the underdog. She says that whenever I got in trouble at school and she had to come up to the school to get me, it was never because I initiated trouble, but it was always because I was intervening on behalf of someone who was in trouble. And so I think that for whatever reason, and I almost hate when people come to me and tell me something, because I'm like, oh, Lord. And my husband be like, this ain't your fight, Sharon. This ain't your fight. But I just can't not get involved. And so I don't know why I have such a deep, growing passion to see that people are treated fairly. But I do. And when I figure that out, I will write a book and sell it to y'all so y'all can get copies and we can make some money off of that thing. What's the next question?
What books, TED Talks, YouTube videos, etc. do you suggest to help us on this journey?
I've had the opportunity to read a book with my white colleagues from around the state. So I work at Ivy Tech Community College, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs. And there are 18 of us across the state. And we have, over the past six to 8 weeks, maybe longer, a few months, we've been reading a book called White Fragility.
Oh, I've heard of that one. Yeah.
I really, really, really would encourage you to read White Fragility, because it's a very, very good book. It's a book written by a Caucasian woman to Caucasian people, and she is very in your face. But I honestly think that it's a book that's going to help you get better in touch with who you are and what your feelings are, and then be able to address those feelings and concerns that you may have. So that definitely would be my recommendation.
Mine is a documentary, I Am Not Your Negro, James Baldwin. That's a good one.
I can't remember the author, but it's the New Jim Crow by Sheryl Who's it by?
Cheryl Alexander? Michelle Alexander, thank you. That's a good book, The New Jim Crow. Becoming is a good book too, yep, by Michelle Obama. Next question.
What are some ways during this pandemic you'd recommend to get involved with the upcoming election?
Ooh, y'all know not to ask me that kind of question. How can you not get involved? Like, you locked at home, right, sis? Bruh, make them phone calls. Start calling. Make sure right now people need to be registered. Get the app to register to vote and text it to every single person under the age of 18 or at the age of 18, gonna be 17, 18, 21, whatever. Text it to them and tell them to make sure they get registered to vote. That's one thing you can do. Making the phone calls is another thing you can do. Normally, we would knock on doors and see all that. Well, you can't do that right now with COVID going on, but we can call, we can text, we can email, and we can plead to people to listen to what the candidates are saying. Listen to what the candidates are saying. I know we have a diverse crowd because we're a vow, and that's what we stand for. We don't stand for just one party. We represent both parties. But I want you to listen to what the candidates are saying. And if it lines up with your views, then consider your views, right? And if it doesn't line up with your views, then consider that and figure out which one to vote for. But we need our voters to know what they are getting into this November. And so those are things that you can absolutely wholeheartedly do during a pandemic to help candidates out, to get the message out.
I think that one of the things that is so important during this time is to teach our young people, our children, our grandchildren, the importance of voting, and remind them of how many lives were lost because of the fight to just get the vote. It upsets me that we take it so, you know, nonchalantly when it comes time for voting. And you got a captive audience because it can't go anywhere, so, you know, make your children learn.
As a teacher, I've tried to teach things about the civil rights movement and race issues in America. It's frustrating to see African-American teenagers not care about their history. What suggestions do you have to help me as I'm trying to teach to help them care enough to even learn about their history?
With everything that's going on, I started to go in and do more research and looking into Black culture and Black history and where we come from. My mom on Juneteenth called me and she apologized because she said, we've been forcing you guys so much about education, but we didn't teach you enough about your Black culture. And I appreciate her apologizing. And I look at that like, you know, that would be something I do with my kids. But I think it starts at home. A lot of this of what we're talking about, especially with racism, starts at home. So if we do more of educating our kids, because we can't expect the school system to teach them everything. And we know that. We, you know, they have the courses that they pick, but people aren't always using those in the real world. But your culture and where we come from, that is a part of you.
If you don't think you're getting through to your students, then invite someone to come into your classroom to teach them, and someone who looks like them to come and teach them about the history, and I'm available.
What method can be used to reconcile diversity and change of organizational culture?
All of them. Yeah, that's a big question, right? Because there is no one method. It depends on the person, the topic, the situation, all things that go into it. But what I would say is try them all. And when you land on the one that works, then use that one. But don't just try one and give up and say we tried it.
How do you talk to people who aren't ready to listen? Is it worth the conversation, or should we focus on people who are ready to listen first?
Well, the Bible says that, you know, if they don't hear you, shake the dust and move on. Don't waste your time with it. If you know you've honestly spoken with them and tried to get them to understand them. Maybe you're not the one to get the message to them. Maybe you need to find another friend of yours and then let them maybe try to get to them. But I'd shake the dust and keep going and try to work it some other way with somebody else who wouldn't listen.
But isn't it sometimes, wouldn't you say sometimes you could just be the seed planter? Like, we all got to know our roles, right? Like, we could be the one that's responsible for planting the seed. Someone else might be responsible for coming along and watering it. And then it's up to God to turn the heart.
Absolutely. But the thing is that the ground may not be ready to receive the seed. Hey! So, therefore, hey! I got to keep going and go somewhere else.
Look at that. Come on. I'm sorry. I call her elder because she is the elder at my church. So I only know her by, out of respect, I only know her by elder. Can I call you D? I don't want to call you D. I'm going to call you elder. All right. You see her face, how she tuned up when she, y'all see how she tuned up at me when I almost called? All right. Next question.
I feel as though we are at a tipping point in the Black Lives Matters movement. Do you?
Tipping point, we're ready to change.
Oh, change has come to America. Change has definitely come to America. It's needed change. Unfortunately, it took the life of a young man.
Several.
Well, it took several, but I don't know why George Floyd was different. I don't know why, but his was different. There's a different conversation. There's a different...
he called out mama.
Yes. Oh, my. And so I believe that we have reached that point where we have got to have serious conversations, and not just conversations, because, you know what, I've been a part of so many think groups. I've been a part of a lot of think groups and what we're going to do and strategies and all that stuff. And we say a lot of good stuff while we're here. But then we go back to our homes and our communities, and we really don't do anything to make a change. Don't let today, I know you've heard a lot of stuff, but I pray to God that you've heard something that you will take back into your community and say, I'm going to make a change. And so the change is here. Change has come.
I did my radio program on Sunday, and I talked about Lest We Forget, which was the article in Inkspot. And it listed all of those names of those people who were killed back in from 1958 to 1960, and there were I think it was over 45 names, and I called every one of those names. Some of those I knew about, and some I didn't. But lest we forget the history, then we're bound to repeat it if we don't know it. So get to know the history, and then it's a tip, but it can leave you out if you're not interested in really doing the work.
All right, this is the last question. How do we hold those who hire accountable in fair housing practices, and when was the last time it was checked?
Me. Listen, let me just say, I'm former director of Metro Human Relations Commission as well. One of the things that we did when we didn't have a person, we did testing. We did employment testing, housing testing, and if we didn't have a person to come to the office to file the complaint, I, as the director, became the complainant and filed director's complaints. So I request of Metro Human Relations Commission, do some testing, do some director's complaints, because the ordinance gives you the right to do a director's complaint, but you got to be willing to take the brunt of it. Housing discrimination is definitely on the rise. It is here. It is ongoing. And so is others discrimination going on. But I would employ the Metro Human Relations Commission. Start utilizing the director's complaint part of the ordinance.
All right. I have one last question. You can come on up, Patty. This one is one last question that I saved because all of this is for naught if we don't recognize and realize that we have young people that are watching us as leaders and as adults. And so I want to ask the panel, and I'll ask you guys to this same question to think about this. How do you think your current behavior in this situation is being received as a leader or as an adult by our young people? Do you think your behavior would be something that they will be proud of? Or do you think it's something that you need to challenge yourself to do better? How do you think your behavior in this situation is being perceived by adults and impacting our young people during the Floyd and COVID? They're stuck at home and then they get to see Mr. Floyd. How do you think what you're doing is being impacted? Let me answer. I'll help you out.
Okay.
When I sat in front of the TV and watched this all take place, my first thought was to cry, right? Because I just felt hopeless and helpless, like there was nothing that I could do. And when my 17-year-old daughter came to me looking for answers, I didn't have them. I didn't know what to say to her. And she said, "Mom, why do people dislike us so much because of the color of our skin?" And I said, "Honey, that's the million-dollar question." And we had to have other conversations. But then I've also noticed that she's been watching me yell at the TV and what I'm saying to the TV. So I'm asking you, as leaders, as adults, what do you think the kids are seeing from you?
In terms of the pandemic, COVID, when we talk about that, when that first hit, oh, they were seeing a lot of fear. I was just so afraid to walk out the house. You touched the doorknob, I was spraying it down. You know, it was weird because I would be in my car by myself and I had my mask on with the window up. And I'm like, okay, now this is really crazy. So... But then I had to think, boy, those kids, I'm putting that kind of fear in them. But I want them to be educated. I want them to understand that you got to be safe, that COVID is here, that you got to wash your hands and all those things. So I had to find a medium for me and for them. And so I had to say, okay, we know it's here. We're going to wash our hands. We're going to do the things that keep us safe. So I calmed myself down on that. And my anxiety went down. Now, with the Floyd case, I had not really, I mean, we've talked about Floyd, but I just cried a lot about that at first. It wasn't until I watched Just Mercy on Saturday that I was able to have a conversation with my two grandsons who I'm raising. I was able to have a conversation with them, a real conversation. But at first I didn't know what to say. I really did not know what to say to them. And so now I'm having a conversation, an honest conversation with them. And so I believe that I'm leading them in a more positive way now and getting rid of the fear, but just being honest with them.
I've never really been a reactionary person. I'm not one to show a whole lot of emotion. And I've been very guarded. And the reason why I've been guarded is because I have a 26-year-old, a 23-year-old. They know me. They know when I'm angry. They know when I'm frustrated. And I really don't have to say a whole lot. The reason why I'm guarded is because I also have a 9-year-old. And I have a 9-year-old, Pauline and I were talking about this a little bit earlier, that attends a predominantly white school. And he's had a whole lot of challenges at the age of 9 that you wouldn't expect a child to have when it comes to race. And so I'm guarded in how I respond because I'm trying to train up my child in the way of the Lord. And so I don't want to be the one teaching him to hate. So I'm very guarded in how I respond. But I do get a lot of questions from him. You know, he doesn't understand. And I do my best to try to explain in a way that he can try to understand, but not to cause fear, because I don't want my child growing up afraid. I want him to be strong in who he is. So, you know, I guess I never thought about that. You know, I don't know if my two older children, especially, if they would be expecting more from me, because they know how I am. I'm just very reserved, but I get, you know, it builds up. You know, and then when it builds up, it kind of explodes, which isn't good all the time. But that's a good question.
Well, I have an 11-year-old grandson who refuses to go home. His name is Safai. So he asked the question, you know, Nana, why did that happen? And I said, I can't explain it right now. You know, but I had to walk out the room and then had to come back. Then his next question was, when you were a little older than I and was participating in the civil rights movement, I know you saw so many of your friends get killed. He brought up the bombing of 16th Street Baptist Church and all of that. And then he said, well, I noticed he kept staying around home. Now, usually I have to find him. But, you know, he wasn't riding his bike and all of that. And I asked him, you know, kind of like, where are your friends? Why? He said, well, we decided we'll just stay at home because we don't want what happened to Mr. Floyd, you know, to happen to us. And at 11 years old, you know, do I explode and say it's not going to happen because I'm going to protect you? But I can't protect him all the time. So I have to tell him, be careful where you go and who you're with. And chances are things will be all right. But by 9 o'clock, you better be in this house, you know, so I know where you are.
I would say the generation after me will be very proud. You know, like you guys said, I've been a part of Girls Rock. I'm active in my church. It's several things that I participate in and giving back to the community and the future generation. And like, even with, because I've been one of the people to protest or go out there, I'm watching what I'm doing because I know there's other people watching me. And I feel like part of the issue or breakdown is people have put people in a box and they think, well, one protester did it, so all of them did it. And like, even, you know, to be called uneducated and I'm breeding and, you know, stuff like that. It's just a level of ignorance that has been passed on and on. And so I lead by example because I'm not going to loot. I love Fort Wayne. I love what they're doing to Fort Wayne. I'm not going to participate in tearing Fort Wayne up because that's not the problem. The problem is police brutality. That's why we're doing it. And so just me, I lead by example. I keep my head straight on why I started this and why I stand for what I stand for. And so I definitely think the people behind me and the kids watching me are proud of me.
Awesome. I'm proud of you. Would you guys please give a round of applause for our panelists today? On the far end, we have Miss Chanel Love, Delois McKinley, Kim Barnett Johnson, and Paulette Nellums. Thank you guys so much.
This has been an episode of WBOI Presents. Special thanks to Avow founders Patty Hayes, Rachel Tobin-Smith, Marilyn Moran Townsend, and Faith Van Gilder for organizing this event. And special thanks to Luke Holliger for providing audio for this program. Our music is by Mark Waldick, Noah Campodonico, and Kurt Remke. Our web producer is Loyal Vandenberg. Our production assistants are Monica Blankenship and Michaela Veltum. Until next time, thank you for listening. from WBOI Fort Wayne.